Ohio approved and licensed for disposal. At Ron Evans Enterprises, they specialize in sewage system installation and repair. Ron Evans has a full line of flex pipe, culverts, concrete and plastic septic tanks, sewer fittings, waterline rolls for the Home American water heaters, along with toilets, standard and ADA. It's all at Ron Evans Enterprise, LLC. Give them a call today at 1-800-537-9528 or 740-286-5930.
At Vinton County National Bank, we believe in supporting the areas where we live and work. Now, we'd like to honor those who also serve our communities. Our new Community Champions account is especially for first responders, veterans, active military, and anyone employed in the fields of healthcare or education. This account offers rewards, discounts, and other benefits to those who give so much to others. Vinton County National Bank, rewarding those who serve.
Would you like to work closer to home, save money on gas, and be rewarded for your hard work and attendance? Then Belicio Foods is looking for you. That's right, Belicio Foods is now hiring for multiple positions and shifts with great employee benefits, an on-site health clinic, competitive wages, and advancement opportunities. Belicio Foods is a company that truly values their employees. Apply online at beliciofoods.com/careers.
Happy Friday, everyone, and welcome to the morning show right here on Main Street TV, where Pete and I match this morning.
How about that?
We're like Valentine's
Day. You got the memo, didn't you?
See, I wasn't here on Valentine's Day, so we're going to celebrate it today.
Okay. All right. Well, every day, let's just spread love and cheer,
that's
right?
That's right. And every day we get to be with Pete Wilson is like Valentine's Day.
Okay. Well, I tell you, you are too sweet. You are too sweet. What's such a sweet girl?
It was that cookie that Tanya made out there that I ate this morning.
Okay, that spice cake, that was good.
It was good.
See, if you like spice cake, you like spice cookies, and she's right. Yes and yes.
There you go. Can't right. go wrong with that.
Exactly.
But, however, we didn't come in here to talk about being sweet or cookies. You came in to talk about the news, mm-hmm. and there's quite a bit of it going on this morning. Yeah,
there is, and some of it's kind of on the breaking side, and so, you know, let's get right into it. And the first report that we're going to give you comes out of the Jackson County Fair Board, and it's very interesting, to say the least.
Okay.
This information came to me first on Wednesday, some follow-up information on Thursday. I'm sure it's not been out anywhere else. But a Jackson County Fair Board member has been suspended from the Fair Board and is being investigated for an alleged sexual harassment complaint.
Oh.
Right.
Wow.
Right. I guess maybe the investigation there, not sure about the time frame of the investigation, but I don't think like this is something real new. It's just it's in an investigation phase now. Now, here is what I have received, and this is from the Fair Board. Mike Farley, who is the Fair Board president, put out a statement to the Telegram and the radio, and we followed up with some other questions. And Ryan Pelletier, who is the vice president of the Fair Board, he wants the Fair Board to be, he's kind of acting as a press officer, public information person. He and the other members of the executive committee that's been handling this at this point want to be as transparent with the public as possible, not hide anything, say what they can say, not say what they shouldn't say at this point, and I commend them for what they have done so far. But what they say is that they have received word that a Fair Board member, and there's 21 members of the Fair Board, and we're not going to give you a name because it's an allegation at this point.
Yeah.
But the person is accused of a form of sexual harassment that would violate the code of conduct policy for 4-H and for the fair and like that.
Okay.
Now, here's the deal. As of right now, this is not, I don't want to raise a bunch of alarms, this is not a criminal investigation. This is more of an administrative investigation. Now, that's not saying that it might not develop into something else, because I'm not hiding anything either. I don't know the details of exactly what this sexual harassment is, but it does involve just one victim at this point. At least that's what they know at this point.
Wow.
If other people come forward and say, hey, listen, something like this happened to me too, you know, that may develop as this becomes known.
Okay.
But the allegation is being investigated by the Ohio State University Office of Institutional Equity. Now, I've never heard of them, but they are investigating because 4-H and Extension is involved in this situation.
And we didn't talk about that when Maddie and Josh were in the other day, but Ohio State Extension is the overseer of 4-H and all of that
Correct.
Stuff. And they're a pretty big university. So, yes, I'm sure they do have
right.
different departments and whatnot to handle this situation.
Right.
Kind of
situation. So, and we didn't get the information from them, but it has been confirmed through legalities and through what Ryan did to get me information that we can report that it is under investigation. The executive committee of the Fair Board is also involved in that investigation. And the executive committee members are President Mike Farley, Vice President Ryan Pelletier, Secretary Gerald Fulkerson, and Treasurer Kevin Wilson. 21 members of the Fair Board, the 21 members of the Fair Board, I think, are also aware generally of this complaint, but
okay.
it is the executive committee, along with this Ohio State office that's looking into this situation.
If there's anything you can't take lightly, it's stuff like that. So,
well, you know, there's
you have to investigate
600
it.
Some 4-H members in Jackson County, and this
and their kids.
Right. So, you know, it is a big deal. You want to handle this thing correctly.
Yeah.
Now, what has happened so far is that the executive committee, and this is pretty fresh, they met yesterday, and they have suspended that Fair Board member as a Fair Board member.
Okay.
They are not naming anybody right now because, you know, at this point, this is just an allegation. But until, you know, it develops and more is known, this person has been suspended. Now, the Fair Board could take action if there is a two-thirds vote. That would be 14 out of 21. They could vote to remove this Fair Board member, make the suspension a termination, no matter what happens with the investigation. They have the right to do that. Chances are they're going to wait and see.
Yeah, you'd kind of wait to make sure
that and get all the information because you want to be fair to everybody, including the person accused, of course. And the Fair Board, I think, has another meeting here coming up next week. Don't know whether there'll be anything developed from that, but I don't know how long the investigation might take. But as of right now, it involves one complaint involving one person that would, if it's true, violate the code of conduct for Fair Board members and people who deal with 4-H and like that. And I said sexual harassment. I didn't say anything else about sex or
anything like that.
I don't want anyone to get the...
That's more of like a verbal situation.
Right, or some kind of communication or whatever that might be considered inappropriate.
Yeah.
Once again, not a criminal investigation at this point, but, you know, the thing is not over yet. The Fair Board President, Mike Farley, made this statement, and this is going to be included in the story that we'll be putting out on our website later this morning, and then, of course, in the print edition tomorrow. We'll have a report on the radio as well. This is what Mike Farley said in his statement. Quote, the directors of the Jackson County Fair Board are aware of an ongoing investigation into allegations involving a director of the Fair Board. The board considers this an extremely serious situation and has cooperated fully with the investigation. We will continue to monitor the outcome of this probe and act if warranted. The board remains committed to providing a family-oriented agriculture youth education event to our county and surrounding communities, unquote. Now, that was the first thing I got. Afterwards, I asked some questions that, I mean, anyone would ask who's curious, wanting to know a little bit more. And that's where some of this other information came. And I commend the Fair Board and Ryan Pelletier and the Executive Committee for saying as much as they can at this point. So that is where that stands.
Wow.
A Fair Board member is being investigated, has been suspended from the Fair Board while this investigation is going on, and the allegation is a form of sexual harassment with one victim.
Okay. Well, they'll get to the bottom of it, I'm sure.
All right. Okay. Elsewhere in the news, of course, on Saturday, February 24th, tragedy visited Jackson County when three persons were killed in an airplane crash that occurred just before noon near the Jackson County Airport. The plane crashed. It was a small passenger plane, and it crashed just off Barton Road, no more than a quarter mile from the airport. And killed in that crash was the pilot, Daniel T. Baker of Mount Zion Road, Jackson, his father, Robert Daniel Baker, who is from Scioto County, and Zebulon D. Logan, a friend of the Bakers, who is also from Scioto County. And they were killed instantly in this crash. And any time, and you know, we had coverage of that, but any time this happens, it automatically triggers a very extensive investigation.
From a lot of different organizations and people.
And kind of taking the lead on the crash investigation is the National Transportation Safety Board. That is federal. And they normally do a preliminary report where they're looking at everything. They're looking at the plane. They're looking at the flying conditions. They're looking at the pilot. They're looking at everything.
Everything.
Because, you know, it's all about, in the long run, safety. They want to explain and know why an accident like this happened, particularly where, you know, you have a fatality-related situation. They have issued a preliminary report that was posted yesterday.
Okay.
All right? And so we have a story that will be going out on that. It'll be in the print edition on Saturday. We'll also have that up on the website later today. But here are the highlights of that report. It's not really long. And this is a preliminary report.
Preliminary.
That could change. It will certainly be added to, but this is the first blush, like the preliminary autopsy report you get. And then you have to wait a long time for the rest of it.
Right.
As a matter of fact, they say that a full report usually is 12 to 24 months in the making, which seems...
So a year to 2 years.
That's what is posted generally about how it works in a routine situation. But here are some of the facts. Here are some of the highlights, and this will be reported in more detail in our newspaper coverage. The small plane was in the air for only 4 minutes after takeoff. It caught fire on impact with the ground. That resulted in the destruction of the plane and a lot of the parts and whatever. This, I'm sure, was hampered a little bit of the investigation.
Correct.
Because, I mean, airplane crash, there's going to be a lot of damage, but then there was a fire on top of that. All right. Here's a biggie. The weather and flying conditions were very unfavorable at the time of the crash, with heavy snow, gusting winds, and limited visibility. Now, I remember talking to the sheriff on that day, and he noted light snow when they were out there.
It was.
And I think it was overall a light snow day, but at the time, unfortunately, that plane took off, the snow was a little bit heavier.
Yep.
It was probably the worst part of that small storm that day.
Just a very unfortunate timing.
The visibility was not very good either. So this was not in the National Transportation Safety Board report, but it's a conjecture of the local officials that were there. And as I said, this was not addressed in the report, but they believe that the airplane took off. Maybe because of the flying conditions and the weather conditions, the pilot was trying to come back to the airport when he crashed.
Okay.
That may or may not be true, but that's the conjecture. Certainly, you know, after he got up there, you know, maybe it got worse just after a minute or two after he took off.
That's exactly right.
That is possible. Okay, now here's another interesting aspect to the report. There were separate eyewitnesses, at least two, who provided testimony for this report.
Oh, wow.
The first was a flight instructor at the airport who saw the plane take off, and the second was a nearby resident who saw the plane as it got low to the ground and just before it crashed. And then he heard, or this person, I don't know what man or woman, actually heard the crash, didn't see the crash, but heard the crash.
Okay.
Saw the plane flying so low that this eyewitness said you could almost read the registration number on the plane. That's how low it was at the time that it was seen. The flight instructor, who was apparently at the airport, seemed to think that the takeoff was okay, but due to the weather conditions and whatever, that eyewitness, who was a flight instructor, obviously has some flying experience, mm-hmm. He said he did not feel good about the outcome of the flight because of the situation. He had a he had a
bad feeling.
He had a feeling of dread about the situation when that plane went up in those conditions.
Okay.
All right. Investigators did not find any mechanical defects that could have caused or contributed to the crash.
Okay.
You know, when they're examining everything. According to the flight, according to Mr. Baker's flight instructor, Mr. Baker had about 20 hours of what is called, and this is in quotes, flying under the hood, and he was working on an instrument rating, which is an advanced, it's an advanced qualification you have for flying.
Okay.
And he was working on this, but had not attained this instrument rating yet. According to what I found from Gleam Aviation, a little bit more of a description on this because, you know, we're not pilots. With an instrument rating, pilots are trained to navigate solely using aircraft instruments, like an altimeter, mm-hmm. airspeed indicator, attitude indicator, navigation radios, and GPS, rather than relying on external visual references. This is crucial for flying at night and in times of low visibility.
Yes.
All right. So, one of the things that the eyewitness said, he said he observed the flight. The airplane departed during a period of heavy snowfall. That came from an eyewitness. A witness on the airport property, who was also a flight instructor, reported that the takeoff appeared normal, but because of the weather conditions and the poor visibility, he told his wife to note the time. Quote: He did not feel that this flight would have a good outcome. So, that is in the report as well. The airplane came to a rest about 1/2 mile from the departure end of the runway. And they said it was estimated that the plane was probably in the air 4 minutes.
Okay.
A total of 4 minutes. So, I gave you the highlights there, but a little bit more we'll have in our newspaper report. All right. Last night, there was a fire not very far from here, almost a stone's throw from here, in the on 108 Eastview Drive. That's a mobile home just off East Main Street, the other side of East Main Street, behind the Walnut Hills Animal Clinic and like that. You know, there's mobile homes back there.
There's a park back. Okay. Like a
subdivision.
There's
no outlet in the back, so you know, you only go back there if you live there, visiting or something. But anyway, at 108 Eastview Drive, the resident's name was Wanda Moore. There was a fire on the underneath of the trailer, and there is a picture at the scene. Red Thompson Jr. was working late, and he ran there and checked it out. And according to Fire Chief Dave Channel, this was preliminary information that we received this morning. Jeremiah had called Dave and got this, and we'll be writing this up as well. Hopefully, get it in the paper. There was a fire that was believed to be electrical in nature that affected the underneath the trailer, the underpinning. The fire caused damage
there. How would that happen?
I do not know. They thought electrical, probably. I'm not sure if that's concrete. But the fire did not reach into the mobile home itself, thankfully. But the Jackson Fire Department was there. The Liberty Township Fire Department was there. And, you know, they were able to get the fire under control. Don't believe that anybody was injured or anything like that. Here is a video that Red took at the scene last night. This is posted on our Telegram Facebook page. We've had several thousand views on this already. I think a lot of people even looked at it last night. The fire trucks came through town from Liberty Township and all the way from in town from the Jackson Fire Station. So a lot of people probably wondered what was going
on.
A lot of sirens. About 10:30 last night is when this occurred.
Well, thank goodness they were able to get that out quickly, because a lot of times mobile homes aren't that fortunate.
No, they don't. It doesn't work very well with a mobile home, even more so than a bricks and mortar house.
Thank goodness for all of our fire departments, right?
Exactly. And speaking of fire departments, There was a fire this morning. Not sure whether it's still going on or not, but some folks here in town may have heard sirens again. The Bloomfield Township Fire Department was at a fire that was on CH&D Road. Haven't confirmed for sure that a structure was involved, but I think it was because we had multiple fire departments reporting a structure was involved or was threatened at least by this fire that was said to be electrical in nature. I have not talked to Joe Alcox or anybody with the Bloomfield Township Fire Department yet, but the Bloomfield Fire Department was there. I believe the Madison Jefferson Fire Department was there. The Jackson Fire Department was there too. You know, we have an automatic mutual aid situation in some situations. Anytime that you have a residential structure involved, or maybe even any structure, it's automatic because you kind of have to go and ask questions later. You have to be go there and maybe save somebody's home. But we'll try to get the report on that. That was very early this morning. As a matter of fact, Rodney Tomlin here, who was doing his radio show, poked his head out the door, heard all the sirens, asked me about it. I had just arrived, didn't hear any sirens, but that's what we found out in a call to the Jackson Police Department.
Okay.
So we'll try to track down information on that as well. All right, Wednesday morning was a big time for the University of Rio Grande. They had a ribbon-cutting ceremony to celebrate the opening of the reimagined, renovated, improved Rhodes Student Center. That is one of the big buildings on the campus down there. It's a gathering place kind of for students, whether they're residential students and or commuter students and visitors. And this was the ribbon that was cut there. Alex Shope, our editorial assistant, was there, has written an outstanding story, has taken some photos as well. We're going to get this in the paper as well as soon as I can. If not today, it'll be in the paper next week. But this ribbon-cutting ceremony through the Rhodes Center basically improved. There's an exterior view of the Rhodes Center. It's a pretty big building there.
Yeah.
And they were able to get $1.8 million in state money and then $365,000 of their own money to do a major renovation improvement project. And this was something that, you know, was thought of, dreamed of, planning was as far back as 2014, and it's finally done now. But it is considered, the Rhodes Student Center is considered to be the nerve center for all facets of college life. The admissions representatives are there, success coaches, health services, the billing department representatives, and many more. And they have a big lobby area that's kind of like a gathering area, whatever. There's even a bookstore.
In
the Rhodes Student Center. There it is right there. So Ryan Smith, the president of the University of Rio Grande Community College, was there. He spoke as well as some other Rio Grande leaders, and so we will have that report as well. But a red letter day for the University of Rio Grande as you know, they continue to evolve, expand, and improve for the future.
Awesome.
All right, and speaking of improvements, we've mentioned this, and they thought, the city officials thought this was important enough to celebrate, and it was well worth celebrating, and that is the start of the South Street Waterline Project. They had a ribbon cutting, not a ribbon cutting, a groundbreaking. Got to get my breakings right. They had a groundbreaking ceremony there on South Street, on East South Street, where there is a big sign that is promoting the project. It promotes the fact, there it is right there, Dylan put it up there. You see in big letters, EDA, that stands for Economic Development Administration.
Yes.
And that is the federal agency that provided much of the funding for this project. Those are city officials and representatives of the contractor and the engineer that are all out there in front with their shovels. The actual work, though, we went down to the other end of South Street near the David Avenue intersection,
yeah.
And that is where the work is going on right now. You can see that's a pretty good size hole there.
That's a big ditch.
That's
going
to be a new water line. There's a water main in there already. They're going to be going up South Street generally in a easterly direction from David Avenue, and when they're done, it'll probably be sometime in August. It'll be all the way to East Main Street. So we're talking about almost all of South Street, which is one of the major residential streets in town. This will replace a water line that dates back to 1898. So obviously it's time. So we'll have, you know, these photos and a report on that.
So will South Street go down to one lane, or how's that going to work, Pete?
Well, we ask that question. Where they're working, I mean, you can expect restricted situations like one lane or whatever with the flaggers, kind of the way it's been with the gas line work.
Yeah.
But when they're moving equipment, there might be very brief periods where the entire road is closed. You can't get through.
But it won't be the whole road the whole time.
No.
It'll just be sections.
They're not going to hopscotch around, from what I understand. They're going to start on one end and kind of work their way towards Main Street. So that'll give you an idea, because the time frame is, you know, the March through August. So that'll give you the time frame. And they're digging in the street, have to do that. And when they do the laterals are where they're on your property, connecting that new water line with the lines on your property to where your water service
Correct.
Is. And when they do that, you know, they're going to be in the yard just like the gas line people were in some cases. Of course, everything's going to be put back the way it was, but you just have to be patient.
It will be frustrating, but it will be so nice when
it's done. This is progress. And you know, what I have been told, I'm not the project engineer, but what I've been told is they're going to stay, going to do it in a progressive way, where they're just moving easterly on the street. They're going to do the water line all at once, and then they're going to come back and do the laterals. I ask if water would be disrupted because, you know, they're putting in a new water line. The answer is they think not.
Okay.
Because what they're doing is they're putting the new water line on the left side of the street. I'll say the left side of the street. I should say the north side of the street.
Okay.
All right, because I was thinking about, you know,
if you're going towards South Street going toward Main Street.
Yeah, looking up, it would be on the left, but we'll call that the north side. The existing water line is on the south side. So they won't turn off the south side water line until the north side water line, the new water line, is ready to go.
Okay.
Now, at the point that they connect the new water line with the laterals that are in your yard, there could be a very brief disruption, but they hope there won't be any.
Okay.
So just because they have a new water line, that doesn't mean that there won't be any water like for half day or anything like that.
Right.
So that's the
awesome.
That's the way that's supposed to work. And this is a $1.75 million project. I think it's really more money than that, but that's the contract for the contractor, which is BP Pipelines out of Quincy, Kentucky.
Okay.
All right. Also want to report, this comes from the Vinton County Sheriff's Office. A lady by the name of Kimberly Johnson, age 41, of MacArthur. There's Kimberly right there. They did a traffic stop. This was just last Monday. She was detained by deputies and arrested on charges of possession of drugs after suspected fentanyl was found on her person. It started out as just a traffic stop, but it turned into a possession of fentanyl. And so she was arrested and taken into custody.
Okay.
And faces possession of drug charges. Mm. All right, it is the political season, and we did have kind of a political event. It wasn't necessarily open to the public. It wasn't advertised that way. But nonetheless, there was a pretty good-sized gathering at the Stockroom 601 on Tuesday evening to promote the candidacy of Jackson County resident Larry Kidd, who is one of 11 Republican candidates running for the second congressional district seat. That's the seat that's currently held by Congressman Brad Winstrup, who is from the Cincinnati area. Actually, he now lives in Hillsboro. He moved. He decided late last year that he was not going to run for reelection, and he announced it. Excuse me. That ended up with all these people then deciding to run for that seat. So I think you got a couple pictures there, don't you? There we go. That is Larry Kidd right there talking during the fundraiser. It's a very expensive thing to run for office. Larry has put in these press releases that he spent over $1 million of his own money, and plus, you know, he's getting donations as well.
Sure.
And when you're talking about a district that goes almost all the way from Cincinnati all the way across southern Ohio, along the Ohio River and up a few counties, like Jackson County and Vinton County are both in it, you know, you travel a lot, but you need to advertise a lot because, you got to reach all those new voters. And with 11 candidates, many of them not being known district-wide, it is a major, major undertaking. So he talked about that. He also talked about his support for President Trump, former President Trump, who, of course, is running to be president again here in 2024, and the fact that he was the only candidate to submit a brief to the United States Supreme Court in support of President Trump when the state of Colorado tried to take President Trump off the ballot. And, of course, the United States Supreme Court ruled very recently that, you know, they can't do that.
Okay.
Because that's happened with several states who felt like they had the legal right to do that, to take Trump off the ballot because of the January 6th event, claiming, you know, that he was an insurrectionist. So, anyway, Larry Kidd is a Jackson County resident, Jackson County businessman, one of 11 candidates who is running for that congressional spot. There's only one Democrat now because there had been two, but one pulled out, and Samantha Meadows is the only one. We heard about her earlier with the fundraiser that was also here in Jackson.
Yep.
So, you know, when these candidates who are running through these main seats, state level, district level, they take the time to come to Jackson and speak, we like to try to cover it.
Sure.
So this story about Larry Kidd will be in our Saturday edition. Okay, on the business side, we had the opening of a new business in downtown Jackson last Saturday.
Okay.
I think you're probably familiar with them. Downtown Jackson Nutrition.
Yes.
There they are right there. That is, I believe, right by the Spot on Main, isn't it?
Yes, right beside.
And you can see there was a good turnout there.
Wow, yes.
Jackson Area Chamber of Commerce did it. The City of Jackson, Mayor Evans, always, Randy Evans, always shows up to these things as well. I think Councilwoman Marva Colby was there as well. And Downtown Jackson Nutrition, there had been a Jackson Nutrition that had been in the Classic Plaza. And this is a very similar business, but this is different owners than where that was.
Yep.
And so this is in a new location downtown at 294 East Main Street is the address. And their goal, and I guess they've gone over, it's gone over pretty well so far, their goal is to prove that what is nutritious can be delicious as well. You know, they have the protein shakes and then the health food shakes and all like that, you know, the protein, vitamin heavy things that are supposed to be good for you, whether you're an athlete or you're not. And the owners are Caden and Cameron Harden. Caden is known locally because she's from Oak Hill, and Cameron is from Piketon. And they have been very pleased. There they are right there. They've been very pleased with the response that they have gotten so far. So new business in downtown Jackson called Downtown Jackson Nutrition. Alex Shope was there to cover that last Saturday, and we will be having a story in one of our upcoming editions on that ribbon-cutting event and details about the business and what they offer. And we certainly, all the new businesses that come to town, I mean, you're an entrepreneur. You know, you appreciate the support.
Absolutely.
You should appreciate the support of the public, and you invite everybody to give them a try. I know they're friendly people, and they have been happy so far with how things are going. All right. We also want to welcome a very important person, not from Jackson, but a person who certainly has impact on Jackson, because Dr. Rodney Stout is the new CEO of the Hoser Health System.
Oh, okay.
Of course, Hoser has a hospital in Jackson, as well as the clinic out on Pattonsville Road.
Yes.
And there's the Hoser Assisted Living, you know, right next to Hoser, just down the street from the hospital. And Rodney Stout is the new CEO. He lives in Galpalis, and he has a long history there with the Hoser Health System. And he replaces Dr. Michael Cannaday, who had been the CEO. And Dr. Stout actually started on January 1st, and this announcement, though, just came out, so we wanted to share that information as soon as we could. When asked about his outlook, he said he wants to continue to provide excellent care and employment opportunities to area residents and also into Western West Virginia, which is part of Hoser's service area. He wants to build on past successes while facing head-on the challenges that all healthcare organizations have, which include staffing shortages, implementing new technologies, and dealing with, yes, artificial intelligence and what role that may play in healthcare.
Sure.
You hear that more and more. All right, we'll go to an honors now. The Jackson County Fair Livestock Committee will receive a very important state award tomorrow. It's called the 4-H Community Service Award. And they were nominated by Maddie Allman, who, of course, is our 4-H Extension educator. She was just here the other day to promote her spring health fair. But she nominated the Livestock Committee because of all the volunteer things that they do, including the Haunted Barn and the other things they do around the fair. The 4-H Community Service Award recognizes adult and youth 4-H volunteers who have collaborated with community groups or undertaken them with their own 4-H club and their community service projects. Of course, the Livestock Committee, you know, does all the things they do at the fair. They do the Dinner in the Dust event. They do the Haunted Barn. All these events that are good for the community, they raise a lot of money themselves to support the fair and 4-H. And Maddie thought that they would be a good nominee for this state-level award, and they will be receiving it. That will take place tomorrow during the Ohio 4-H Conference, which will be going on this weekend, and that award will be presented Saturday during a luncheon at the Greater Columbus Convention Center.
Okay.
So congratulations to the Jackson County Fair Livestock Committee, and Dale Gillen, who is the president of the committee, he wanted to publicly thank Maddie Allman for thinking of the Livestock Committee. They don't do it for the recognition, but everybody appreciates being appreciated, you know, when they try to do
absolutely,
things.
Yes.
All right. You know, we talked about the Larry Kidd fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
We've got early voting that is still going on, and
we're making a big turn,
Jen, because now those early in-person hours where the elections offices all over the state are open longer, they're going to be open on the weekends now for at least some time. Tomorrow, they'll be open from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. This is a first-time thing for this election cycle. Before, they extended the hours during the weekdays. Now they're going to go into the weekends, and then next week they will extend the hours even on the weekdays. But tomorrow, the Jackson County Board of Elections and the Vinton County Board of Elections will both be open from 8 to 4 for early voters, and not on Sunday, but on Saturday this weekend. Then next week, on Monday, they'll be open from 7:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. On Tuesday, 7:30 a.m. to 8:30 p.m., and then the rest of the week, Wednesday through Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m., and then they'll be open 8 to 4 again on Saturday, and then even on Sunday, March the 17th, St. Patty's Day, they'll be open from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. That will be the last day for early in-person voting. And, of course, you know, both Jackson and Vinton counties are nominating congressional candidates. Of course, on the Republican side, we said there were 11 candidates. In Vinton County, we have contested races on both the Republican and Democratic side for county commissioner. So I'm sure that's a high-interest item in Vinton County.
Mm-hmm.
And in Jackson County, we have a couple of local levies as well.
Okay.
So,
that's great.
So the Jackson County Board of Elections at 25 East South Street, they've been over there a couple years now. We want to remind you it's in the Job and Family Service Building. You go around to the back. There's a sign in the front to guide
you. It's very obvious when you get around back there.
Exactly. And the Vinton County Board of Elections is in the Vinton County Community Building just on the north end of MacArthur. All right. We also want to tell you that at the at Hope Haven, which is the school that is operated by the Jackson County Board of Developmental Disabilities, very recently, Jackson County Probate Juvenile Judge Justin Skaggs swore in the newest board member for the Jackson County Board of Developmental Disabilities. And we don't hear as much about that board and that operation, but it's obviously very important. You know, they operate Hope Haven that has both, younger students as well as older individuals who are clients. But the new board member is Emily Williamson. Judge Skaggs, there is Emily there on the left, and there is Judge Skaggs there on the right swearing her in. I believe that board normally meets the third Tuesday of every month. They have monthly meetings. The superintendent there is Nick Elliott, and the principal there at Hope Haven is Christy Parks Byler.
Okay.
So, you know, we try to get in some news every now and then about the important things that they do there. They have a couple social and fundraiser events during the year. But it is a big operation with some different rules that they have to abide by for the type of education and help that they provide. So we'll have that story in our paper as well on Saturday. Speaking of the developmental disabilities, this past just here in the last week or two, representatives of the local Board of Developmental Disabilities, both in Jackson County and Vinton County, made visits to the county commissioners because this month is Developmental Disabilities Awareness Month. And they do that to not only get support from the public officials, but to also get some public awareness that they are out there and they're doing this work and that they do need public support. We'll tell you more about that maybe next week, but this whole month is Developmental Disabilities Awareness Month. And that's
okay.
It's a national observation, and it is being recognized locally, both in Jackson County and in Vinton County. All right, I'll take a drink, and then we'll go to sports. Just water, folks. All right.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe I wish it were something else, but it's water. All right. On the sports side, I know we've talked about this, but we want to wish our state tournament athletes the very best.
Yes.
We have a total of three wrestlers from Jackson High School and one from Vinton County High School who will be wrestling tomorrow, I think, in the state wrestling tournament.
Okay.
In Jackson County, we have Braden McGinnis on the boys' side, and on the girls' side, we have McKenna Craft and Madeline Riddle. And then from Vinton County, we have Travis Bucklew on the boys' side. And so congratulations to all of them, and best of luck to them and their coaches. And there isn't any – that is the ultimate, getting to the state tournament, whether it's a team or an individual.
It is.
So very, very special. And, of course, McKenna Craft, we have to always throw this in. She is the defending state champion.
She is.
Just a sophomore at
yes.
Jackson High School. I still remember last year how she was in the state tournament or something high up. I don't know whether it was a state thing, but she had traveled to Columbus or whatever. And that's what she did by day. And by night, she went to the sweetheart dance.
Yes. Remember so that? Yeah.
That was something.
I remember.
All right. And then, of course, I believe he was here yesterday.
Yes.
Yes, you had Blake Woodyard.
Yes.
He is just a freshman.
Just a freshman.
And he is going to the state bowling tournament. And that is today, I understand.
Yeah, we need to keep tabs on him today.
Lanes in Columbus. We will certainly do that. And he is the first Jackson High School bowler to make it to the state tournament since 2019. So congratulations to him.
That's awesome.
Speaking of sports, we want to congratulate the University of Rio Grande Red Storm women.
Okay.
They have had a great season again. They are 26-5. What a record. And they just finished winning the River States Conference Tournament Championship. So I'm sure that they'll be in a national championship. But the reason that we're mentioning that, that's worth mentioning, but we have another individual local angle. There in that picture with the members of the team is Scott Borden, Jackson County resident Scott Borden. A quarterfinal game, which was last week, not this week when they won the conference championship tournament, but a week ago, it was a quarterfinal game, and that game was sponsored in memory of two very special people in Scott's life who, unfortunately, he lost last year within weeks of each other, his wife Sandy and his son Ryan.
Yeah.
And Scott, of course, has a connection with the University of Rio Grande. He was a career officer high up with the Ohio State Highway Patrol. That's how the Bordens came to Jackson. But then after he retired from the patrol, he went to work as the campus police chief at the University of Rio Grande.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
10 years.
Wow.
10
okay.
years. So he has a connection with the University of Rio Grande. And this game was sponsored in memory of Ryan and Sandy. And they're very special people. Just to remind you, Ryan tragically died, you know, at the age of 33, I think. In the summer of 2023, and he was the one who made the winning shot that gave the Oak Hill Oaks the state championship
yes.
in 2009.
So cool.
Right. And and then his mother, Sandy, who died just weeks after he did of cancer, she was the volunteer Energizer Bunny
oh, man.
In Jackson County.
She had her hands
there
in everything.
Anybody who did more yeah. for people and for good causes in Jackson County than she did. I mean, if somebody did, call me out, but, you know, I would like to know who that would be.
Yeah, she was always into something.
Right, and so, you know, he honored their memory by sponsoring this basketball game with the University of Rio Grande women's team, which is a story in and of itself because, you know, they have won their conference tournament.
Super cool.
All right. Speaking of sports, the Grand Slam Supper that is held to support the Jackson High School baseball team was last Saturday. And I think that half of Jackson was there. And anybody that passed by the Park's Edge Event Center probably wondered what was going on.
That
Look at that
crazy.
Room there.
Crazy.
I believe I've been told that that room holds 350. I was there, and I tell you what, I didn't see very many empty seats. But as you can see, about all the tables were full,
That's
you can tell
awesome.
From that picture. And this is the main fundraiser for the baseball team. And many people may not realize this. A lot of the money that goes into the sports programs is just not from the athletic department budget. That's honestly, in many cases, not enough.
Yeah.
So the support clubs, the private support clubs that are affiliated with the schools, but it's really parents and other supporters, they do fundraisers to raise money to provide needed funds and also for niceties that maybe, you know, couldn't be afforded in the regular budget. But in all honesty, those people I took a picture of, and that's going to be in the paper on Saturday too. That was representatives of Geiger Brothers, auctioneer Patrick Ball, head coach Josh McGraw. That's Patrick Ball on the left, head coach Josh McGraw on the right. And those other folks that are in the picture are representatives or have a connection with Geiger Brothers,
yes.
who paid $1,000 for that gift basket right there.
That's awesome.
There were like gift baskets for each grade. There were other things that were sold at the live auction too, but these were the main items. They went for anywhere from $400 to $1,000. Then you have the $10 admission for a great chicken noodle dinner.
Yep.
And so these two ladies right here, they had to have their picture taken. Talk about behind-the-scenes heroes.
Oh,
that is Terry
you're not
McGraw.
Kidding.
Terry McGraw, the coach's wife, is on the left. Her mother, Pamela East, is on the right. And they are standing by a big pot of noodles. And let me tell you this. They made enough noodles to feed 400 people. And they were homemade. They didn't just pour them out of a box and boil them. These were homemade chicken and noodles that they made that was the main course there. And they made enough, let me see here, I wrote this down. They made enough to serve 400 people. I don't know whether they ran out or not, but they probably came close to running out. 21 gallons of homemade noodles, chicken and noodles. So congratulations to them. And I did not get any final figures, but most of the money that the baseball program spends for basics, I mean, we're talking about equipment, gloves, balls, field, stuff for the field.
Well, Coach was telling me that they can go through like 20 some baseballs a game.
They can, and baseballs
and
are not as
not
cheap. They're not as cheap as you think.
I had no idea about that.
I believe the budget for the baseball team, I was told, was something like $30,000 a year. That may be more than you would think for a baseball team.
Yeah.
But that's what things cost. I mean, uniforms.
It's crazy.
Uniforms are expensive, too. You
yes.
know that if you get a personalized T-shirt or jacket or whatever,
yeah.
you know. And then, you know, and at Jackson, a lot of kids play. A lot of kids participate. And so this allows them to have really nice things. And to be honest, if there wasn't a support club, I don't know what they would do. At Jackson, and this is really the case, I think, at all of our four local schools, lots of places have what they call pay for play, which
yes.
means that because there isn't enough money in the school budget to support athletics, if you want to pay, you know, you pay a participation fee, and that may be beyond what some families can
That's
afford.
For sure.
That does not happen here in our local area, and a lot of that has to do not only with school support, but maybe even more so with these support clubs.
Yep.
But I'm just so impressed with that Grand Slam Supper.
That's
awesome. The Jackson High School baseball team has been very successful, Jen. They have had three straight 20-win seasons. 20 wins is a lot of victories in a baseball
yes.
season. And they hope to make it four this year. And Coach McGraw and the kids, the people who run the bullpen club, which is the support club, they all know that the community support is important. It
yes.
isn't enough just to want to make it happen. And evidence of that was all the people that were in that room that night who not only bought noodle dinners, but then they bid for split the pot.
For other things,
and other things. Or they bought a pie for $100 or something. It really just blows you away, the support. But the Jackson High School baseball team will be going to Myrtle Beach, and that money doesn't even go for the Myrtle Beach trip. The kids raise their own money for
that. Yes, they do.
But it's March 25th to 29th. They'll be playing at Myrtle Beach. I hope they make it to the beach at some time. I think they will. And then the regular season, that is not the regular season. Well, it is the regular season, but then the regular schedule playing the Ohio teams home and away, that will start right after they get back. Our first home game is April the 2nd, and when I say ours, I mean that the radio will be back covering the Jackson High School baseball home games again. Myself and Dan Morrow will be there. Dylan Euler is going to be there providing extra technical expertise, and I'm letting the cat out of the bag, so I hope he comes through. By golly, we're going to have some video streaming to go along with our commentary.
No pressure, Dylan.
Well, we've done it before a couple times, but it wasn't a continuing thing. And Dylan is a kind of a can-do, let's try to do this type of person. Yep. So we'll see what happens. But we're going to give it the old college try.
There you go.
All right. And of course, some other things this weekend we want to remind you of. We mentioned it before, but we don't want you to forget about it. The Oak Hill Drama Club is doing Shrek the Musical Junior.
Yes.
Performances tonight. Tomorrow night and on Sunday, they do a dinner theater tonight, and that's all sold out. So forget that.
Yep.
But I think they have some tickets left for Saturday and Sunday. So good luck to Brittany Kugel and all the people that's doing Shrek the Musical Junior.
That's going to be fun.
Of course, the Boy Scout Troop 5057 will be having their spaghetti dinner and auction tomorrow.
Yes.
Starts early with the serving of spaghetti at 11. And that will go until they have, you know, till they run out. I have a feeling they won't run out. And then they do activities during the day, and it all ends with a live auction at 6 o'clock.
Yes.
And just as it was with the Grand Slam Supper, I am so impressed with the number of donations they get from the community for that live auction. And then they get a lot of bidders there to buy things. Whether they need them or not, they show up.
That's right.
So congratulations and good luck to them. Real quick, also want to tell you, since we're running out of time, in Vinton County, there's going to be some culvert replacement projects that will affect traffic next week. We just got this information from ODOT District 10, which has Vinton County in its coverage area. From Wednesday, March 13th through the 15th, so that's next Wednesday through Friday, State Route 278 will be closed from Willabout Road to US 50 through a culvert replacement project. That work will take place during the day, 8 a.m. to 3:30 p.m., and then they'll open it up. So it's not like it's closed this whole time for those 3 days, but during the working hours. Same thing, from Wednesday, March 20th, from the 18th to the 20th, next the week after, that will be on State Route 278 from Long Ridge Road to Township Road, F-14. That's culvert replacement work. And then there's a couple others that take place later in the month. We'll tell you about those later on. We also want to remind you that the Jackson High School alumni is selling patron sponsorships. This will support these will support scholarships that Jackson High School Alumni Committee do. All it is, Jennifer, $10 for a business, $5 for an individual if you're a graduate, or you just want to support us as an individual. And that money all goes to scholarships, every cent of it. We're all volunteers on that alumni committee. And speaking of alumni, a lot of the alumni celebrations that go on are in conjunction with Memorial Day and graduations, and so we'll be telling you more about those as time goes on. And do not forget that on Sunday, it is Spring Forward time.
Spring Forward.
It's literally a 23-hour day. You're going to lose an hour between 2 a.m. and 3 a.m. Most people will be asleep when that happens.
Yep.
But when you wake up,
I will be.
When you wake up, you better know that your clock should be moved ahead.
Don't be late.
If you have a manual clock, you got to do it. If it's an automatic clock, you hope the technology comes through for you.
That's right.
But they also remind you of the Ohio State Fire Marshal's office always tells you that this is a good time to change the batteries in your smoke alarms.
Because
it should be done twice a year, and so why not kind of plan it around the change of times? Of course, it officially happens at 2 a.m. At 2 a.m. it becomes 3 a.m. That's on Sunday.
Yep.
And that will go until Sunday, November 3rd, when we go back to standard time. Real quick, I'll ask you this because it is a big controversy.
Yeah.
Should we be on daylight savings time all the time or standard time all the time? Should there not be a flip-flop? Most states do daylight savings time, but there are two or three that do not. And that really screws you up.
It's really, yeah, it causes a mess. For me, I feel like it should be universal throughout the United States.
That would be nice if everybody did the same thing.
But I also hate the moving the clock back and forth. So I don't know. Obviously, it's much nicer when it's not dark at 4:30 or 5 o'clock at night. So I'm kind of a proponent for the daylight savings time myself. But it's also a little harder to wake up in the morning.
Well, yeah,
you don't have that sunlight.
If you're starting early in the morning and you're on that daylight savings time, you wonder if it's ever going to get light.
But it's also nice to have that extra time at night.
Yes, it is. And of course, it all had to do way back when with farmers and like that. And so we're past that now, but you can make arguments either way. But I will just say this much. I would like it if all 50 states did the same thing.
Agreed. And honestly, I wish they would just pick one and stick with it.
Right. Because when Pam and I were on vacation last year, you know, you drove into New Mexico and then you drove into Arizona and they weren't on daylight time.
And like, so, how are you supposed to know? Like, it's just...
Well, and it's a real challenge for your cell phones and your automatic clocks and like that. But they're supposed to know. But anyway, the bottom line is daylight savings time kicks in the state of Ohio on Sunday. Do not forget, 2 a.m. becomes 3 a.m. You don't have to do it at 2 a.m., but do it before you go to bed.
That's
change
right.
That clock.
And realize if you have somewhere to be on Sunday morning, like church or work or whatever, don't be late.
Yeah, and you know, if you got yourself programmed needing a certain amount of sleep, just go to bed an hour early.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you could probably start now and start prepping yourself for that. Sorry about that. So yeah, but I'm with you. I just wish they would just leave it alone.
Right, exactly.
Just pick one and stick with it.
Well, there's a lot of talk at the national level and state level, and nothing ever gets done
because
they're probably worried about making half the people angry.
Shocker.
Yep.
So did you watch the debate last night, Pete?
The State of the Union.
I did. The State of the Union.
I did, yes.
Okay.
But I think most Americans did, and that's very important to tune in, I think, and to pay attention. I know it's easy to get skeptical, cynical, take one side or the other.
Yeah.
But here is what I would say, and I'll hold to this. I won't take a position other than listen to everybody and make up your mind and don't be prejudiced one way or the other.
Correct.
Because I am very uneasy about anybody who thinks that is a one-way highway, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, and I know there's plenty of those on both sides.
Can't we just all be in the middle?
Right, right. Or have some flexible thinking.
Or at least think for yourself.
Right, right. Half of us are not angels and the other half devils, I'm sure of that.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Well, very good. Thank you, Pete, for filling us in on all you know this morning and much more. And we will be back next week. We hope that you have a wonderful weekend. Some rain in the forecast, possibly today, but definitely tomorrow. Pretty moderate, normal temperatures for this time of the year. So get out and about. If you can find some dry time, you probably need to mow your grass already. Can you believe that?
It's greening up. And of course, I had some daffodils come out.
It gives you hope.
They may get killed before the end of the week, but you know, they're out.
They're strong little boogers.
They're put it this way.
They
push the envelope there.
They do.
It doesn't
take
much for them to come out.
Nope. All right. Well, have a wonderful weekend, everyone. We'll be right back on Monday with more here on Main Street TV. So thank you for watching. Bye-bye.